Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we've got Andrew Massey. Andrew is the co-founder of Convos. Andrew, how you doing?
I'm great, Christian. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, man. Well, it's great to have you on. Really excited. And let's start with Convos. Love to learn more about the company and what problem you guys are solving in the market.
Yeah. So at Convos, we are an AI-powered platform that powers text messages with political campaigns. And so the idea there is, instead of sending out blast texts that don't, you know, encourage any replies, we send out messages for political campaigns, or the political campaign set up accounts with us. And then an AI agent with all of their policy information is able to converse with the voter.
What was the inspiration behind starting the company?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, we started the company about a year and a half ago, around the last election. And the real inspiration was frustration with all of the spam texts that I was getting with, you know, political campaigns that were running. And I thought, you know, it's really frustrating that you can reply to these texts and never get a response, never get any information from them. And so we found a really cool opportunity there to improve that.
So politics and the laws that surround it are a bit outside of my wheelhouse. But I know enough to know that there are, you know, federal and state regs that dictate what you can and can't do. And so can you give us a down and dirty 101? Like, what are the big considerations that you have to navigate when building the product?
Yeah, absolutely. And this is kind of why the text messaging space is so important right now, is that there are more regulations than, say, email, mm-hmm. or even sometimes just calling or sending physical mail. Every campaign has to be registered with an independent body called the Campaign Registry. Okay. And they go through a strenuous process of making sure that all the opt-in and compliance information is there, so that the campaigns kind of follow those guidelines. And it's really strict in the political space, because there are certain guidelines you have to follow when it comes to how you reach out to people, what you're allowed to say in the first text message, how that first text gets sent. And so we kind of went into this space with, you know, all of those cards stacked against us there, to really learn all of those things that we had to navigate.
And so do most states and federal regs require opt-in? Like, do they already have to be on a campaign donor list before you can reach out to them?
So no, that's a really great question. The way that it works is that there's two types of sending in the text sphere. There's A2P, which is automated, and then there's P2P, which is peer-to-peer. And the law basically allows you to tap messages, essentially, and not have an explicit opt-in from that recipient. Oh. And so a campaign can go download a bunch of donor files with a bunch of phone numbers. They can bring that over to us, and then we actually handle the compliant peer-to-peer sending of those messages.
Okay. You know, my default assumption is that a lot of the spirit of these messaging are campaign contributions, but maybe some of it is just voter education. Do you see one more than the other? And then, you know, however the cards fall, I mean, are there implications depending on what messages you're spending that dictate the approach?
Yeah, so we definitely do see some of the fundraising aspect of it, where, you know, campaigns are looking to raise money for their cause. But a lot of get out the vote campaigns are run as well. And those happen, you know, months, days, or the day of an election. And basically, they just want to get people out to vote, and they want to educate their base on, you know, all of the information that they're looking for. And that was where we really felt like we could shine and where we have seen our platform be used pretty extensively.
All right, so I would love to unpack some trends that you notice. Are certain political parties more tech savvy than others? Does the age of the politician, have an impact on adoption? What are you seeing?
It's interesting. A year ago, there was a lot of hesitancy to even talk about using AI technology in the political space. I think there was a lot of distrust. And also, AI as a technology in general has really made quite larger strides in the past, even 6 months, I'd say, where the hallucinations are greatly reduced, and the information you're getting is a little bit better. We've seen over the last 6 months to a year that more and more people that may have been hesitant previously are starting to come around to being okay with using AI in their campaigns. We do see it on both sides, really. The recent case study that we're about to publish was a Wisconsin race for a Supreme Court justice who got elected. And we sent out, I believe, 2.5 million texts to about 1 million voters out in Wisconsin.
Wow.
And so that was a really big initiative there.
And okay, so let's take that a little bit further. So was
Sure.
the did the person who won, were they anticipated, or do you have any sense as to the impact that the technology had on the outcome?
It was definitely not just like a clear like they were going to win going into it. And so we definitely felt like we played a big impact in that. We didn't work directly with the campaign, but we worked with a nonprofit group that was, invested in getting that justice elected. And, it was really interesting to see how many people actually conversed with the AI agent. Out of the 1 million voters we reached out to, I believe we had 20,000 meaningful conversations, meaningful meaning like four or more messages, and where they asked questions, they asked where they could vote. Things about the justice in general. So, really cool to see
What
that.
would be, what was the expectation?
You never really know going into it. I think what we've found is really interesting is more and more people will actually be comfortable and have longer conversations when you disclose that they're talking to an AI agent in the beginning,
Really?
which you wouldn't think so, right? But I think it has to do with maybe they don't feel like they're being judged by a person that when they're talking to it, and they think, okay, I'm looking at this as a tool that I can use to get the information I'm looking for.
Interesting. I thought hadn't even crossed my mind.
It's a very interesting statistic.
And so what's the and all right, so a year and a half in, what's the approach that you guys have taken from a product development perspective? Are you building your own models? How are you training them? What steps are you taking to minimize hallucinations?
Yeah, so the main thing, especially when working with political campaigns, right, is setting up guardrails and making sure that the product first and foremost is safe enough for a political campaign to use and not worry about it saying something that they don't approve of or that their candidate doesn't believe. And so that was really step one in building the platform as a whole. We do use a variety of different foundational models. But the way we've built them into the system just from day one has been with that safety in mind. And so ultimately, from a high level view, the way it works is when it's constructing a message that it wants to send, it's only using the information that the campaign provided to us. So we have a system called source points, and the campaign loads in those source points, and those can be anything. It can be their stance on different issues or events coming up. And we feed those source points to the agent, and that's all it gets. It doesn't go and search the internet for anything. It doesn't have access to additional information. That's it. That's its closed circuit in a way, closed circuit box. And then when it generates the message, we make sure that it didn't actually add anything additional. And so there is that second layer of security to check. And then it gets sent out to the voter.
And how much of this is, Obviously it has to be non-deterministic because it doesn't know what it's going to ask, but you're giving it a script. And
Yes.
so, how, what are some of the key lessons that you've learned in order to keep the agent on script?
So that's a great question. Previously, with other text platforms that did have some type of reply functionality, it was very much like a script. Like they would either have canned replies and it would just kind of pick from those to send back. The way we built this is what we call motive. So it's motive driven. And what that means is, on top of the information that they load in to the source points, they define a motive for the conversation. And that motive can really be anything in plain English. It can be super simple. It can be something like, I want to get RSVPs for this upcoming event. Or it can be complicated. It can have branching logic. It can say, I want to educate this person. If they're interested, then I want you to push them to donate. If they're not interested, then XYZ. So there's really lots of ways it can go and really make each conversation feel very natural and dynamic.
Okay. Obviously the applications for this are far and wide. That said, I whether it was intentional or not, I applaud you for picking a niche and growing it there. But
For sure.
as you start to look around you, what are some of the other opportunities that have your attention outside of politics?
Yeah, I think the nonprofit space is really interesting. I think they could have a lot of use when it comes to the fundraising efforts that they partake in. Additionally, colleges. College fundraising is a large industry as well and a large use case. I could also see this more, the customer support angle could be interesting, right? I think there's a little bit more to that because you'd want it to be able to take actions for people, maybe look up their orders or check on, something relating to that. So there's a little bit more there. I also think going into politics first was, we did have to niche into something, and politics felt like that was where the volume was, where the most texts are sent, and that was kind of the logical place to go. It's also the hardest, right? It's so regulated and so secure that if we can survive in this space, then we can definitely bring it to other industries.
No, that makes great sense. How big is the team?
It's me and my co-founder, Tom.
Wow. And so how much of that, obviously there's a lot of talk about the first $1 billion company run by one person, obviously and not lost me a co-founder, but how much of this so far is, saying, hey, let's see how far we can take this on two people versus just being very thoughtful and about how you start to build out the team.
Yeah, I think, me and Tom have always been very scrappy when it comes to entrepreneurial ventures. We've tried many different things as for as long as we've known each other. And so it really is very much like we want to see how far we can go. And then, we're not experts in everything, right? So once we find, that we're not able to put 100% into a certain area, that's when I think we'd probably consider the hiring aspect of it and bringing somebody else on. So it's definitely not out of the question at all.
So, notwithstanding your own personal strengths, what are some of the, as you look across the business, what are some of the key functions that have bubbled up to have your attention when you say to yourself, oh, I could see this requiring people first.
Sure. I'd actually say marketing. We have a great PR team, but when it comes to ad buying and that sort of sphere, I'm definitely not a professional in that in any sense of the word there. I'm a software engineer by trade. So I can build the stuff and I can make it look great, but when it comes to, the marketing and ad space, that's definitely not my
Got it.
specialty.
And what's Tom's background?
Tom is an entrepreneur. He has a finance background. He went to school for finance, and so he's really great with numbers. And so he handles that side of it for sure.
Got it. And so, all right, so let's talk about financing. You guys bootstrapped so far, or have you raised any outside capital?
Strictly angel investment.
Okay. And how much was that intentional in terms of, okay.
Yeah,
And what
just through personal connections.
And do you have what are the financing plans for the future?
It's really interesting. Right now we're running pretty lean, I'd say. I definitely wouldn't count out a fundraising round. I definitely think we want to get to a point where we feel like we're ready for that. We're getting on to more and more campaigns every week, and so it feels like it's kind of coming in faster than we're anticipating, but I don't know, we just kind of take it as it comes.
Okay. I think that makes great sense. Obviously, if you're going to dilute yourself, that there better be a good reason. Is it fair to say that the yardstick is going to be top line growth, or are you guys looking at other indicators to make a decision of whether or not you want to pour some fuel on the fire?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I think the grand vision for this thing is where the voters themselves actually are familiar with the brand Convos, and that when they get one of our texts from a political campaign, they almost know that they can text it back and they can have a great conversation with it and get the information they're looking for. So there's the B2B side when we're working with the campaigns, but there's also that public aspect to it.
All right. So let's unpack distribution. What's been the approach to increase or grow the client base?
When we first started out, Tom, I mean, again, just grinding. I mean, I know Tom will tell you, he just spent countless nights messaging people on LinkedIn, just trying to increase the network. But lately, I'd say a lot of it has been word of mouth. A lot of referrals have been really fueling it lately. And I think that's something really cool too, because, going from full outbound to actually finally having some inbound stuff is a nice change.
And as part of that, did you find that you're gravitating to certain geographies in the country, either because it's convenient or because the state regs just push you in that direction?
No, I'd say we're kind of all over the place. We're East Coast, West Coast. There are different regulations per state, and some are stricter than others. For example, California is one of those where you have to disclose. You're not even given a choice. You have to disclose that it's an AI agent in the first text. We've built this company to be transparent. We're not trying to trick anybody. And if anybody ever asks our agent if it's an AI agent, it'll always say, yes, I'm an AI agent. But there are some campaigns that may want to use first person versus third person. And states like California, they just make sure that it's clear that it's an AI.
Got it. And then it's okay. Just while we're on the subject, have you ended up building anything into the product so that you can hand it off to a human if a voter or a constituent wants to talk to somebody?
So there's no way to manually text back because we kind of believe in our agent to run that conversation. And also the agent is able to respond within 14 to 15 seconds. So that sometimes is also a giveaway that it is AI, because human texting is definitely slower than that. But we do have lots of guardrails in place to stop conversations from going off the rails, right? And so, our main thing is when somebody is texting with it, if they're overly hostile, or the agent can tell that it's not going to be, and you trust me, we see it a lot.
That
Oh yeah, never. No, quite a bit, quite a bit. And if they're hostile, or it knows that it can't achieve its motive in any way, shape, or form, it'll actually automatically shut down the
Oh,
conversation and stop responding.
fascinating. Yeah, I mean, as I'm listening, I mean, I can imagine that there are researchers out there who would love to get, access to the database of responses, and I'm sure
Oh, I'm sure.
they can give some insights as to what they're reading. All right, and so as you guys look at the budget, how are you thinking about allocating between product development and sales and marketing?
It's a great question. This year we actually, so Convos is the new name. We were kind of working in the shadows under the name PubSent. It was short for public sentiment. But as we built the product and we kept, working on it, we realized that measuring public sentiment is really just a small part of it. And what we really wanted to focus on was the conversational aspect, and that's why we landed on Compose. This year, we've spent a lot when it comes to that, but brand building around Convos. We're really happy with it. I think all of the teams that we brought on to make it happen were incredible. And now it's running with this brand and really and building it up and growing the client list, really.
What do you remember what triggered the switch?
A couple of reasons. Looking up PubSent, didn't always garner the best results because it's very close to the spelling of other words that aren't great. And so that was one thing. Also, I think Convos just overall reflects what we do better.
Got it. If we take a step back, would love to know more
Yeah.
about your professional career, what the trajectory looked like leading up to co-founding the company.
Yeah, definitely. I grew up, so I was born in 95. So I grew up right around, when computers really became household, staples. And my dad worked in tech. And so I was naturally fond of that world. And I learned how to code websites.
Oh.
And yeah, when I was about 12 or 13, I was making websites for, random people in my town. But then, as I got older, I really fell in love with just the software side of it and building software and that kind of led me down that path. And before Convos, I worked at another AI startup and they worked with larger consumer brands like Starbucks, Crumble Cookie, a lot of those food consumer brands. And so built a couple really cool AI things. And that was really my big step into the AI side of tech as well, especially as it was becoming a bigger part of this world.
Where did you end up? Did you end up doing your undergrad in computer science? If not,
I went to college for a semester and then decided it was not for me.
oh, interesting.
Yep.
Good on you. All right. Well, I got to ask now. So, as you reflect back, what's your take on the decision to skip undergrad?
I think that in the world we're in now, especially with the internet, you can learn most things on your own if you're driven and you have that want to go find information. I think it's pretty easy to find. And I think that's kind of how I got where I am is I everything's self-taught. Everything, if I didn't know something, I went and learned it.
I mean, couldn't agree more. I mean, I was, I mean, at this point, I think everyone aware. I mean, I think MIT has posted their entire curriculum online.
Yeah, they have.
And obviously this begs the questions like, well, is there, a networking element that we miss out on? But I mean, there's nothing preventing us from networking in the normal course.
No.
If anything, I guess I think about it. I mean, there's something to be said about geography, but I mean, obviously, internet just has taken down distance, and it gives us the ability to sell regardless of where we are. All right, so you did a stint and at this larger company working with some large brands. Was Convos right or PubSent right after that, or was there another waypoint?
It was, yeah. Me and Tom came up with the idea and we decided, it's now or never. We're at the precipice of AI and it's becoming bigger than, anybody kind of anticipated it would be. And it was time to commit to it. And so we said, you know what? This is such a great idea and let's run with it.
So, for those who are not as in the weeds as you are, we can just characterize it and say the last 12, maybe 6 months is the technology has taken leaps and bounds from where it
Yeah.
was when OpenAI released ChatGPT for the first time.
Sure.
Since then, having set up my own OpenClaw agent, I'm not a coder. I still kind of get the sense, though, that this is early innings and that we have a long way to go. As a developer, what's your take? As you look ahead, I mean, I can only imagine how the world is going to change, but we'd love your perspective.
Absolutely. And I agree. I think it's super early. And I think we are just starting to see it cross over into a new form of intelligence, right? Especially in the development world, a lot of people right now, or developers and engineers, are very caught up on vibe coding, right? How good is a model, or how good a model is, rather, is determined based on can it one shot in a whole application with a single prompt. And I think it's an interesting benchmark, but I don't think it's realistic
Agreed.
because, you know, when it comes to building software, there are a lot of aspects to take into consideration, right? Security being a huge one. And you're seeing now too with some of the stuff Claude is putting out, or Anthropic rather, security holes are going to be easier to find with the more intelligent models. And so having human developers, human engineers have a pulse on what these agents are building and kind of understanding what they're building and the architecture of it will play a big role in making sure security flaws aren't as prevalent.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't know the full backstory, but I think Mythos ended up on, some Reddit channel or access to Reddit channel because of, a security flaw, despite, just finding a whole host of bugs in all this established,
Yeah, they're saying it's finding bugs that have existed in software for 10
decades.
years.
No, it's totally makes sense. I'm curious, did you gravitate towards Claude Code? If not, what tools are you using to build combos?
I've tried my best to remain provider agnostic, because I think a lot of people kind of jumped on the ChatGPT train, including myself, to be honest, because they were kind of the first to the party. And honestly, their platform was great, so smooth, easy to use, very user friendly. But I do think companies like Anthropic and even Google really are making a play for OpenAI. I think that their models are really improving. I actually find that Claude models are really great for engineering and also just general knowledge stuff as well.
If you had to bet today, what does the shakeout look like? Do we have a short list of models that make it, or are there a bunch of models depending on the use case?
That's a tough one. I and my co-founder will like that I'm saying this. I still wouldn't count out Google. Right now, I think Google is kind of on the lower, is probably number three next to Anthropic and OpenAI. But when you think about all of the data Google has at its disposal and all of the search, stuff, I think if they can really nail down their models, they're going to have something pretty huge on their hands.
Totally makes sense. I agree. I'm curious though, it seems like there's still a whole host of problems that need to be solved for, memory chief among them. In my tinkering, I run into it on a regular basis to the point where I'm like, oh my gosh, like we still have a ways to go. And so what, I think about it, you have all that data, but you still have to be able to index it, source it, use it. What do you anticipate as being the solutions? Is it no, it's just people are going to run local models and no one will really care because it'll be totally point specific? Or are you anticipating these large language models will actually just somehow figure out how to lower the cost of compute and get you all the context that you need?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, well, first, I think the open models will follow suit with the foundational models. I think, you're kind of seeing that even with OpenAI. I think they put out their own open source OSS model. The local models are going to be, I think, more popular when it comes to very secure applications, and they don't want to send their data over to somebody like an Anthropic or an OpenAI, or they'd rather keep it all in-house. I think as long as you're following all of the right security protocols, I'm not super concerned about that, especially with their policies of using APIs doesn't share or train their models. I do think the current state of context when it comes to these models and how much context you can have in a session versus how much of that it actually remembers, that still has a ways to go, right? Because I'm sure you've had longer conversations, and once you get to a certain point, it doesn't always remember everything.
Well, and I guess the other thing too is as I find myself in conversations with other colleagues, I'm like, have you carved out time to start just educating yourself on the technology? Because I think unless you actually start building with it, you don't have a real appreciation of what the limitations or capabilities limitations are.
Not only that, I was actually just talking to my father about this. You know, growing up, you saw more and more tech, literacy was a valuable skill to have, being able to use a computer, being able to navigate. And I think you're going to find AI literacy become a skill that a lot of employers even require. Because at the end of the day, AI is makes people more productive. You can knock more stuff out faster. And you're just, if you don't know how to use the AI models and take advantage of them, then you're going to be slower than the next guy. And so it's going to be important.
I mean, as a productivity multiplier, I mean, 100%, what I'm able to achieve, and today pales in comparison, to even 12 months ago. It's
Me
crazy.
too.
I think your point is spot on. I think it's I'd love to know where you stand though on the employment front. Obviously there's a lot of conversation of whether this displaces jobs.
Sure.
I have an opinion, but I'm going to save mine until I hear yours.
Yeah, I think it, I would go back to what I was saying earlier where people want it to just do everything, right? They want to just prompt it and have it build the whole thing. And I think that's unrealistic, right? I still think you need the human element to, at the very least, supervise it. And so, in that sense, yes, I do think lower rungs of the ladder could kind of get thrown into the wood chipper, as a buddy of ours has said. But in our space for convos, that question gets brought up a lot. Like, oh, what about the volunteers that text all these people? And in this last Wisconsin election, we averaged that a volunteer would take about 90 seconds to reply to a text, maybe 60, but we said 90. And we calculated that it would have saved, that we saved over 300,000 volunteer hours responding to all of the messages that we did, which, I mean, you'd need how many volunteers to actually put in that many volunteer hours. So the point there is that you couldn't, right? There's no way you could.
So there's definitely limitations on just, I guess it depends on the task, but point well taken. I echo your sentiment. I have been thinking of it as a tool. But I just think right now we're this ignorance phase. I was talking to a friend of mine who does venture credit, and he was saying that their IC has gotten more conservative because they underwrite to SaaS. And I'm like, yeah, I don't see an AI agent taking over a someone's job per se. I just think it increases their productivity. And using a coder, as a software engineer as an example, I just think they're going to ship more code. I see the same thing on the accounting and finance front. We're still at a point where you need context. Now, whether that changes, I mean, I think it could depend on the use case. Like, I don't think I would still get in a plane unless there was a pilot in the cockpit.
Me neither.
I don't know that I'd go in an OR unless there was a surgeon standing by. Obviously stake, it's the stake dependent, but at the same token, I mean, you're still managing risk in a business when you make decisions. So
Absolutely.
in that regard, I think maybe, human capital gets reorganized, but we're still, I don't think we're there yet. And in the meantime, it just becomes for the companies who, I think you're spot on. The companies who train all their employees to use the technology will have a competitive advantage.
Absolutely. And there's the other side of it too, where it's not so much about doing those productivity tasks, but the analysis power of it too. And that's something that we're taking advantage of. Every time somebody has a text conversation, we're able to scan that whole chat and get so much intelligence out of it and find out what topics they talked about and save those and get an alignment score. How aligned are they with the campaign? So that's stuff that you couldn't do pre-AI either, or at least not easily, in an intelligent way where it's able to read it in plain English and then output it in whatever format you want it to be.
Interesting. I'm curious, is the consensus that that's a first or second order benefit?
I would actually say a first, because that's something that I don't think any other text provider is doing. In addition to that, previously, when it comes to opt-outs, I'm sure you've seen it when you get a text, it says, reply stop to end or stop to opt out. If you don't text back stop exactly, it doesn't count. It doesn't register that that's an opt-out. Whereas our system, you would think it's actually kind of shooting us in the foot and counterintuitive, but we opt out other things. If you text back STIP because you misspelled stop, we'll still catch that. Or if you say something like, stop texting me, that's something that AI is able to interpret exactly as we need it to.
So totally makes sense. You got me thinking though, what are some of the insights that you guys have gleaned looking at the campaigns that you guys have been running?
It's interesting to see. I can't say anything specific, but it's interesting to see the topics that people actually talk about the most, because you see a lot of the repeat ones and we count them up and we say, oh, this topic was talked about in 100 chats or however many. And then their average sentiment on it was this much. And so that's cool information to give to the campaigns too, because it feels like proprietary data. They talk to real people, they got all this back, and now they can make decisions based on that, right? They can decide if they want to run ads on a certain topic or if they want to, reach out to some of the people that they texted with and have some call time with them in person. So it's a cool use of it.
Any ahas that are top of mind that you can share with us?
Yes, all the time. And it kind of comes too from the information that they don't put in. Because in addition to topics that we surface to them, we surface to them things that they didn't add to their source points. And we call those knowledge gaps. And then they can go back and say, oh, wow, we didn't have any policy information on this. And look how many people cared about it. Let's go add that. And then once they added it, the agent then has that.
Yeah, I mean, as still Convos's business, I mean, it's brilliant business intelligence because you're going where the consumer is. They're used to it. You don't have to worry about the device. It's they already own it. Now it just comes a question of, man, there's no shortage of use cases here for you to pursue. Which one's next? I love it. Andrew, before we wrap up, just some final questions. Yeah, one of the my favorite go-to is just a retrospective. As you look back and you reflect on how things have unfolded, anything you would tell your younger self in particular, or anything you would do different?
I don't know if there's anything I'd do different. I would say to my younger self, every time you're facing a problem that you can't solve in that moment, go sleep on it. Because I find that whenever I'm trying to solve something and it's, kicking my ass, if I go get some sleep and come back to it, I don't know if there's psychology to it where you're still solving it subconsciously while you're sleeping, but you'll wake up and being fresh definitely gives you a different perspective.
100% agree. My opinion on the subject is it's about yielding. I think when we're in full thought mode, there can be a lot of friction, and so the answer doesn't come to us.
Sure.
But if you're relaxed, like could you just wake up or in the shower, it's the inspiration comes because you're not anticipating it. Totally makes sense.
Absolutely.
Anyone personally or professionally you want to give a shout out to? We know success is usually a function of not only the founder or co-founder, but just the broader network. And would love to give you an opportunity to give them a shout out.
Yeah, definitely my co-founder Tom. We've actually known each other since kindergarten.
No
And so we've been through a lot, and we've tried a lot of things, and this has been the one thing that, has really stuck. So big shout out to Tom. And yeah, big shout out to my wife too, because she just puts up with me every day, which is great. I need that.
Fantastic. Yeah, spouses are amazing. For us, it's fantastic. 100% agree. That's great. Andrew, if there's anyone in our audience who wants to get a hold of you, either because they want to be the first member of the marketing team, potential investor, or municipality who or politician who's looking to get elected or win a seat here, how can they find you?
Yeah, so you can find me personally on LinkedIn, Andrew Massey. And then you can find all of our stuff on convos.ai, and you can book a demo there and set up a time to chat with me and Tom and see inside the platform and see what we can do for you.
Fantastic. I love it. Andrew, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. I learned a ton today. And for that, I'm grateful. And again, for the benefit of our audience, Andrew Massey, co-founder of Convos. Andrew, thank you.
Thanks so much, Christian.
My pleasure. Have a good one. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com/podcast-guest. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.